welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Herhuck. I'm Sean Cantwell.
Hey, everybody. What's going on?
We got a lot of stuff to do today. Of course, the Lions play this weekend, and we have kind of a question, I guess, we've got to ask about this thing, because it looks like there's not going to be really any consequences, I guess, any incentive for this game this week. I think we've kind of come to the conclusion here that the Lions are locked into the third spot in the NFC playoffs no matter what.
Yep.
So I guess really the question from here is, and I could really be convinced either way on this, the burning question then, if there's really nothing to gain from this, do you sit guys this weekend? Do you bench Jared Goff? Do you sit most of your starters? Or do you just go out, play like normal, win this thing, and move on to the playoffs?
What should they do, or what is Dan Campbell going to do?
Let's take both. Well, let's take the what should they do first.
They should rest some players, rest some of their assets. I mean, the last thing we'd want to see, I'm not going to say a meaningless game, but it's a meaningless game, that Jared Goff goes out with an injury for the playoffs. And you're stuck with Teddy Bridgewater. And nobody wants to see that. I don't even think Teddy Bridgewater wants to see that. Now, what will Campbell do? Campbell was probably going to be worried about rust. He's going to be worried about Jared Goff. He wants to keep this going. So he's probably not going to change one thing.
I would imagine not. Like, I think they are going to run everybody out there. But I'm also convinced that that's not the worst thing in the world to do. It's a lot harder to maintain. I get wanting to rest certain guys. There's some sense in that.
Yep.
But also, you kind of want to maintain the momentum of sorts that you have going. The fact that you've got, right now, you've got a team that's fired up after last week's Dallas thing. Like, you don't want to bench these guys.
Yeah.
And just lose all of the momentum, all of the energy you have going forward on that week. So, I mean, there's probably a few guys you could make an argument to bench, but I don't think as a whole I really want to bench everybody. Two seed, I think, is still in play, by the way, as you've got both Detroit, Dallas, and Philly, you're all tied at 11. So you could move up to the two seed for whatever that might be worth, which would give you, I believe, as of right now, that would give you the matchup against
it was Green Bay.
I think it would be Green Bay. And as of right now, I like your odds to beat Green Bay.
Yeah.
Although you're talking last day of the season that Green Bay, Seattle, and New Orleans are all in contention here.
I don't want Seattle.
I don't want Seattle. I could be fine with the Saints again.
Yep.
I'd be fine with the Pack. I think you can absolutely beat the Pack at home. You can beat New Orleans at home. I think you can beat the Rams at home, but I think ultimately it's going to end up being, because you also remember would need at that point Philly and Dallas both to lose.
Who's Dallas playing?
Who is Dallas playing? No, that's a good question. That would probably that would set us up for a whole lot here. Oh, would you look at that? Eagles are playing the Giants and the Cowboys are playing Washington. They're not going to lose.
Okay,
those games.
So those are both W's. Okay.
Yeah, here. The Eagles aren't losing to Tyrod Taylor, and Cowboys aren't losing to, I don't even know, Sam Howell. Is that who's starting for the Commanders this week? I think.
I don't know. Ted McGinley or something like that.
It might as well be. So they're about to get canceled? Got it. So more than likely you're going to end up still tied with Dallas and or Philly or both. Because, I mean, ultimately you're looking at Dallas would have the tiebreaker over you, I believe, with the head-to-head. And Philly, at that point, I believe they've got, I think it comes down to the divisional race at that point, or the division wins, and they've got you there, too. So
Philly's your number one.
No, Philly's your number two.
Two.
San Fran.
I forgot about San Fran.
Yep, they are locked in as number one at this point. I believe they have clinched the NFC.
Brock Purdy.
Oh, Brock Purdy. He's going to end up being the MVP, and he's, like, not even the best, like, or even the top three player on his own team.
Right.
Because that's just how these things work.
Of course.
So I still feel like it would probably be for the best to get the Lions out, you know, get everyone, all your regulars, at least a few of your regulars out there, get them some reps. You shouldn't have to try too hard, honestly, to beat Minnesota. Nick Mullins is still, I think Nick Mullins is starting for them again this week for whatever reason. They've gone back and forth.
He is a starter.
Yeah, it's been this kind of back and forth. Like, we put this rookie kid in, and, like, I don't think anyone knows what's going on over there. But it is Mullins again, and you beat him once, and I have no doubt that you can do it again. But that said, I feel Dan Campbell is absolutely going to start as many guys as possible. I'm not saying you don't bench people at the half, and that probably would make sense to do, like, Get those running backs out of the game. We don't need any injuries to Jahmyr Gibbs or David Montgomery. Maybe a bench Goff at the half and put in Teddy Football. I don't really see any good of keeping them in much. I mean, you can treat it basically as like your last preseason game, more or less.
Kind of, yeah. Get them in there, get some reps so there's no rust involved. And then if you're winning by halftime, yank them. Pull out.
Yeah, at that point, go ahead and yank everybody. I don't think it's going to hurt all that much.
Nope.
That said, I do think, though, they might actually let Gibbs and Montgomery stay in long enough to get their 1,000 rushing yards on the year. Montgomery's 25 yards away. Jahmyr Gibbs is 85 yards away. It's only happened 5 times in NFL history that you've had a team with 2 running backs that each rush for 1,000 yards. Last two being D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart for the Panthers about 14 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah, then you got to keep those guys in.
Yeah. Like, Montgomery's close enough that he's absolutely going to hit it, and you can probably pull him, you know, after the first quarter, get him his 1,000 yards to get him out of there. Gibbs has a little work to do, but he got close to that yardage against the Vikings last time around. And if you take Montgomery out and get him his reps in and, you know, feed Jahmyr Gibbs, you're absolutely going to get to that 1,000-yard marker there.
Yep.
He had 80 rushing yards last time around against the Vikes. I think he could do that this time around and then some. So, ultimately, probably meaningless game. Not really that concerned about it in the grand scheme of things. Would it suck to lose going into the playoffs? Absolutely. But at the same point in time, you're already in. You've already clinched a home playoff game. You've already, at this point, about guaranteed yourselves that you're playing at least one playoff game no matter what, and there's really not much you can do here that's going to influence that other than who your opponent's going to be, which there's still kind of a dogfight for that last spot in the NFC. So it might not even, we're not even going to know who you're playing regardless until the outcomes of those games are all in the books. So we'll see what happens there. We've got a lot of other stuff I want to touch on, though, this afternoon. We got to get to Michigan in a little bit. Troy Weaver actually finally talked to the media, sort of, kind of. And then, of course, unsolicited advice in the picks. It is happy hour. Stick around. It is happy hour. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And I can't believe we finally actually get to say this, but it is official. The Red Wings are at long last on an actual winning streak again. Cue the music. Hey, hockey town! They still haven't won a game with 3 or fewer goals, but I thought it was actually going to happen last night. I really did.
Yeah.
Like, they were up 3-2 in the third. I'm like, oh my God, I might not have that stat to throw out anymore. Whatever will I do? Exactly. And then, of course, L.A. ties it up. This thing goes to OT. Like, well, of course.
Well, I mean, it was a shootout win, so it's not like they scored 4 goals in the game. It just whoever
wins gets it. They scored 5, actually, because they got 2 in the shootout.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Robbie Fabry with a pair of goals. Good on him.
He's always one of the better – he's been one of the better performing guys in this team for quite – like, really just kind of the –
when he's healthy.
When he's healthy, he's like the heart of the team, really.
Robbie Fabry with his 10th and 11th. And Jeff Petrie with his 2nd of the season. Tied it up at 2-2 in the second period.
Can I just ask something of this team, though?
Sure.
Could we please, like, actually show up before the end of the first period?
Yeah.
could we have any defense or goaltending in the first 5 minutes of games, that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be a... That...
We had a goal in a minute 50 in, another one before 5 minutes was into this thing.
Yep. And Andre Kempe, he had two on the game on the night. Matt Roy scoring and making it 2-0 going into the second period. But if the Wings would start on time, that'd make things a lot easier. But that's just not the way things have been going. Lucas Raymond and Patrick Kane both scoring in the shootout. Alex Lyon, not a bad night for this cat.
No, not at all. Like, I can't even blame the Kempe thing. Like, he was basically in the crease to just tap that first goal in.
Yep.
And, like, he stopped a breakaway or two, but, like, the problem is the Wings keep turning over the puck so much.
More turnovers in Pepperidge Farm, yes. Alex Lyon, yeah, the other Detroit Lion, he earned himself a .930 save percentage. You'll take that all day, every day.
No, absolutely.
So, it looked good. Oh, you also got a couple assists from Daniel Sprong. We've just been really liking what he has brought to the table this season.
Is it fair to say that Sprong was the best signing that Stevie made this offseason?
I think it's, DeBrincat. Well, Alex DeBrincat.
Free agency.
DeBrincat was
DeBrincat was a trade.
Yep. I would say so. I would say he's the most consistent on the plus side. I think Daniel Sprong has done exactly what you've asked of him. So
I feel like he's done more than you've asked of him because I had very little expectations coming in for Sprong. Like, when I saw the name, my first thought was admittedly Daniel Who.
Yeah.
When the Wings signed him. Oh, this is a guy who hasn't ever scored. Well, he's had a couple, like, 15 goal seasons. I guess last year, I didn't realize he scored 21 goals with the Kraken last year. And I think he's on pace right now to surpass that.
Good. I want to see more from him.
He's on pace for his best scoring season ever.
The Wings take on the Ducks on Sunday at 8 o'clock, a game that should be a winner.
Well, you would think that. I would hope so.
The Wings do have this problem of playing down to their competition. So.
Well, they almost did against San Jose again, but...
Yeah. But, I mean, so far, I mean, if they can finish off the Ducks, they will have swept the
West Coast road trip.
Yes. I was going to say Western California, but that doesn't make sense.
As opposed to all those teams in Eastern California,
California, yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I will take a 3-0 West Coast swing all day long.
Sure.
I wouldn't have put it at that going out there, going into it.
Right. And then they don't play again until Thursday. They're going to be hosting the Edmonton Oilers, and then the LA Kings are coming back to town on Saturday.
I like your odds in most of those. I'm not so sure about Edmonton. They've really gotten their you-know-what together in recent weeks. Like, they're now at least hovering back around playoff contention again, which is better than where they were when Jay Woodcroft got sacked.
Right.
You know, at the time, I was really kind of thinking, you know, I'm not so sure that this is going to help them. Like, was he really the problem? And then Chris Knobloch comes in and goes 16-6. Well, I guess he was the problem, or at least a problem.
Well, when you get the coach now, fired, it wakes up the team. It really does.
True. Now let's see if it wakes up the goaltending a little bit more too. Like, that's still going to be your.
Well, they don't have a goaltender. Skinner. I mean, he's not your guy. Kelvin Pickard. We know
Kelvin Pickard's not the guy. We had Kelvin Pickard. He's not a guy for anybody at this point. I mean, the goals against doesn't look bad for what it's worth at .283, but he's also rocking a save percentage of .895, which is not good.
No, it's not good at all. They need to really address that probably in the draft.
Maybe, but this is a team that's built to win now.
Yeah.
Like, they are very much like, we drafted Casa, what, how many years ago now? And he's still obviously not in the majors. Like, you're not, that is a team that is very much in a position to need to start showing some real signs of life in the playoffs if A, Ken Holland wants to keep his job, and B, if you want to convince McDavid and Draisaitl to stick around and be, you know, Oilers for life.
Right.
These are the moves you have to start making now, because if you have another early playoff exit, I don't know if you're going to be able to convince these guys to re-up with you.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, the window is closing on that. How soon until we see Connor McDavid in a Penguins uniform?
I don't know that that would happen. For one, I don't know if the Penguins have the resources really to give up for him. But wouldn't that be something you go right from, like, the face of the league to the face of the league again?
Yeah, pretty much.
That would just be the...
Or Connor McDavid goes plays for the Chicago Connor Bedards.
I don't think Chicago can handle that much, Connor. And I also don't think that McDavid would have much interest in going to what is kind of a clown show of a franchise these days.
Yeah.
And it's hard to really blame him. How long is McDavid? McDavid is signed through the end of the 25-26 season.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, this season and two more, and you can't just keep whiffing in the playoffs and expect that he's going to be accepting of that, okay with that at all. I mean, right. You got into the second round last time and lost. You got to the conference finals against the Avs a few years ago, but other than that, that really just kind of magical playoff run that they had in 22, it's not been a very good time for the Oilers in the playoffs.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they moved and maybe they swing a deal for John Gibson at the deadline. Anaheim's going nowhere fast, and Gibson's is gone.
Gibson's not going to be the answer, but he's better than what you've got in Edmonton.
I don't think they need the answer necessarily. They just need somebody better than Stuart Skinner and Calvin Pickard.
Yeah.
And he's at least both of those things. No one's asking you to be Andrei Vasilevsky.
No.
But he's got 3 years left on his deal. That's the kind of security, really the security at goal that team absolutely desperately needs.
Right.
And they'd have him for a decent amount of term. They would have him through the end of McDavid's contract and, you know, at least a season longer. I think that's probably the move that makes most sense for Edmonton to make.
I'm trying to look over your shoulder here for that cap hit. That
6.4.
I don't think he's worth that money. I mean, a lot of people were talking about wanting the Wings faithful, quote-unquote, wanted to trade for John Gibson. And, like, you wouldn't be happy with him.
I mean, you wouldn't be happy with him because ultimately your defense isn't nearly good enough to really let him thrive.
Right.
That's your problem. And I get that the goaltending situation is not ideal here. No. It isn't. No one's going to try and deny you otherwise. Alex Lyon's basically being trotted out there every night because your other goalies are all banged up.
Yep.
And only kind of effective when they're actually healthy. But Gibson's not going to solve the problems that you have with this Red Wings team. You need defense. You need defense desperately. You need guys who aren't turning the puck over. You need guys who are defensively responsible. And you don't have those in great supply here right now. I mean, I would love nothing more than to see a real first-pairing defenseman show up here and Jeff Petrie to hit the DFA market tomorrow. Nothing would make me happier than this. Now, the question is Stevie Y going to see somebody of appropriate value that he's willing to give up some prospects or something of value for to get him? And that's the part I'm not sure. I mean, I threw out the name Chris Tanev a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
That I think he'd be probably the perfect fit for the Red Wings. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season, so you're not going to have to necessarily break the bank to acquire him. I imagine you're going to want to lock him in for a long-term deal. He's under a four-year, $18 million contract right now with Calgary, and that could certainly be a good option for you without you having to break the bank because he's under team control for so long. Another guy I had kind of floated out there just for whatever it might have been worth, Noah Hanifin, also on that team, who was an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. These are the kind of moves, if you're really serious about, I mean, not necessarily contending now, but at least being competitive now and not mortgaging the future, these are the kind of moves I feel it would really make a lot of sense for the Wings to make. Now, whether they're going to see it that way, whether, quite frankly, that Stevie's going to see this team as a playoff contender by the time the trade deadline rolls around, that's a lot harder to say. Like, are you even going to be in a position to go out and be a buyer by the time that the trade deadline hits?
Right.
I don't honestly know. March 8th is March 8th is the deadline, so you have about 2 months to figure it out, which you should have more answers about this team and what they really are by then. Like, you're playing through a rough stretch right now, but we haven't seen the kind of soul crushing, like, you know, the soul crushing Ottawa Senators back to back blowouts that really that prompted the sell off last season.
Yeah.
I don't think you're obviously not there, but I don't know if Yzerman's going to see it as being enough of a contender to feel it's worth it to make those additions at the deadline. But again, if they don't work out, okay, you let them walk at the end of the season. You're still not giving up a whole lot. They're basically rental players that you could probably extend realistically if you can convince them to buy in. But the fact that they're rental players means that Calgary's not going to be able to ask the moon and stars for any of them.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what moves end up being made, but if you are entertaining any kind of playoff challenge this season, something needs to be done on the defense immediately. Goalie would be nice, but honestly, whoever you have in goalie is just kind of biding their time until the Sebastian Casa show is ready to begin.
Yeah, and that's the real truth.
We got to hit a break. Stick around. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour. He's Adam Harahuk. I'm Sean Cantwell. And we're going to go ahead and take a break from the whole sports thing for a minute because it's time to do our favorite segment of the week, Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice, where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and quite frankly, I think we do this better than the actual people who get paid to do this for a living.
Yeah, pretty much.
So let's dive right into this.
Even if
thing.
It means that we suggest you blowing up your entire life.
And we have suggested that on an occasion or two. So let's dive right into this thing, shall we? Dear anybody other than Sean and Adam, my fiancé Charles and I have a wonderful relationship. We've been together for 8 months and plan to get married in the spring. He has a son, Brian, who is 13 years old. Charles and his wife have been divorced for 6 years, and Brian is with his dad every other weekend. He has his own room and routines while at his dad's house. The thing is, I don't like this kid. He's a combination of sullen and entitled, though he and his dad seem to get along well. I tend to avoid them during his weekends. Looking forward to marriage, I'm wondering how to handle the weekends when his son is around.
You deal with it. First of all, you've only been together 8 months and you're engaged. That's a red flag.
Huge red flag.
And, I mean, you think... She's not one of these people that actually thinks that, you know, oh, I love you so much. After 8 months, let's get hitched in. You know, oh, my kid, I don't need to see him anymore. It's just about you and me, babe.
You would think that, but we've had these come up before where, like, almost like the new partner expects that you're just going to completely throw your children away for them.
Yep.
Like, there are people out there that legitimately think and feel this way and act this way. That's a scary thing.
I would be willing to bet you that... Because the letter doesn't address this, I'd be willing to bet you, like, he's in his late 40s, early 50s, and she's in, like, her late 20s. I bet you there's this big May-December kind of thing going on right there.
No, I'll bet you is he's loaded.
Yeah.
Why do you think she's in such a rush to marry him?
Okay, yeah, that's starting to sound more legit.
I ain't saying she's a gold digger, but you know how the rest of that goes.
Yeah, we're not going to fill in the blanks for you. She has to understand that, yeah, he and his ex-wife have been divorced for 6 years, but the son is still getting used to you. Chill out. I mean, every other weekend for 8 months, that's, what, 16 weekends? 18 weekends? Math? Mm-hmm. I don't give a damn about math.
we know. We know you don't.
So it's like, you know, you probably haven't really extended yourself out to him to get to know him, and yet you've pretty much said he's entitled, and but yet he and his dad have a great relationship. Well, then there you go. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, have you really made an effort to get to know this kid, like, literally at all, or are you literally assuming that he's just going to throw the kid aside once he gets married to you?
I think she is delusional in thinking Yeah, you know what? Now that we're together, I don't need visitation. You know what? I'll see you once on Christmas, once on your birthday, and I think that's good. What do you think? Is there a sport?
Also, I have another question in all this.
Sure.
Have you literally ever met a 13-year-old in your life? They're literally all sullen and entitled. Yeah. That's literally the definition of a 13-year-old boy.
Yep.
They're all like this.
Yep.
Like, you just have you never been around children at any point in your life or possibly even been one? How is this, like, a shock to you?
I mean, as somebody who at one point was 12, 13, 14 years old, I can tell you from experience that between 12, 13, and 14 years old, I think you should be legally defined as, what's a politically correct term? I can't say that. You should have a mental challenge. You are mentally challenged between 12, 13, and 14.
I mean, you've had, you've dealt with 13, 14-year-old, you know, mm-hmm. stepkids or boys, and, like, do they not all go through that phase?
Oh, boys, girls. Yeah, 12, yeah, the 13,
girls aren't
14.
Intimate either.
12, 13, 14, they take on the personality of a trapdoor spider. They just hide in their hole, come out to eat, go back. And they're you know. Yeah, you handle them when you found a raccoon in your trash. You just don't sneak up on them. You talk to them nicely, and yeah, definitely don't scare them. But their brain is—they're having this weird time in their life where they're not a kid, but they're going to be treated like a kid. They're not an adult, but they're expected to act like an adult. And they got the hormones flowing. Brain is retraining itself. You know, I no longer want to play with Play-Doh. I want to play with this, you know, that kind of thing. So people just need to give that age group, give them a little extra rope.
You know? Right. And it seems like the dad doesn't have a problem with him. You're the only one who does. Have you ever considered that maybe you're the problem? Like me, because you come off really judgy in this letter over this teenage kid that you're basically going to be a stepmother to. Hate to damper your parade here, but you're going to be basically an authority / parental figure to this child, whether you like it or not, by virtue of your marrying his father.
I get this feeling that there's only a 10-year age difference between the son and the new wife.
You know, you might entirely be right on that. Although, I don't know. Like,
I'm clean your room. Weren't you and I at the same bus stop, Mom?
Yeah, that is kind of a question I'm wondering a little bit about. Like, it doesn't really say it in the letter, but let's be honest. If it's a young, you know, someone of that age, like someone our age or younger,
yeah,
I doubt they'd be writing to, you know, Dear Abby or whatever it is.
No.
Like, you're not, if you're writing actual letters to a newspaper advice columnist,
right,
you're probably like in your late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's the only hole I can really poke in that theory. I think she's just, I don't want to be a parent. I just want you to abandon your child for me.
Yeah.
And I can't really give any advice to the letter writer, but I would advise the letter writer soon to be beau to run away. Run as far away as you can get.
Get out of
Don't
there.
Let this woman sink any sort of legal agreement into your life. Run.
Run.
Run far and run fast.
Yep.
All right. I think we've helped here. Let's do another one.
That was an easy one.
I know. Really just kind of a
nice warm-up.
Yeah, nice little fastball over the plate. Let's do another one, shall we?
Sure.
Dear, does anyone actually still read these things? I've been with my boyfriend for 5 years. He's been totally estranged from his mother the entire time I've known him. I've never met her. Well, his mother started messaging me on Facebook and really wants to get back into his life. She wants to apologize for the mistake she's made. I invited her over to our house without telling my boyfriend.
Oh, boy.
He blew up when he saw her and now says he wants to break up with me. I was just trying to help him mend his relationship with his mom. What can I do to get him to come back?
Well, the fact she doesn't spell out what the problem was means that she doesn't know. She had no idea, and she was meddling in his affairs, and there's definitely some boundary issues right there.
Huge boundary issues.
She pole vaulted over him, all of them. So, I mean, breaking up with her, I mean, he's obviously upset. He's ticked off. But
that's a huge betrayal of trust.
Yes, absolutely. But it wasn't with malicious intent, like, oh, I'm going to really mess this guy over. She was trying to do the good thing. She screwed up. There's no doubt about that. She screwed up. Now, breaking up with her, I mean, obviously she, I would hope, have learned her lesson from this, and I don't think breaking up is the answer, but she needs to take this as a loss and really learn from it. That, you know, why are you estranged from your mother? Why haven't you talked to her so long? And then get to understand that before you start making those kind of decisions, and then still don't make those decisions. You know, it's his mother.
They're not your decisions to make.
Right.
Like, you can't force this man to have a relationship with a family member that he believes wronged him in whatever way. And we don't know. Granted, we don't know if she knows, but at that point, shouldn't you have that conversation with the boyfriend before you just, surprise, here's the person you've been trying to avoid for the last decade? Like, what is this, an episode of Jerry Springer? Like, what are you doing? Exactly. What are we doing here?
Honey, have a seat. Now, if you could think of one person you never wanted to see before, see again in your life, who would it be? Well, be my mother. Well, turn around.
Like, how did you not think that maybe you should have had that discussion with him when his mom started messaging you? Right. That should have been your first thought, like, to talk to him, like, hey, your mom's been messaging me. I don't know what's up with this. Like, you two have a thing. Like, what's going on here? She's all trying to be apologetic or whatever. Like, what's up? Like,
yeah, that was the first betrayal, not being forthright that
she was contacting.
Yeah,
him. Or so, she contacting her rather.
So I don't think they should break. I don't think he should break up with her. But he's got to sit down and spell out the word boundary for her and give her a good definition. I mean, clearly she doesn't know it.
No. I'm inclined to be fine with, you know, the breakup thing, just because, I mean, we don't know what the issues are. Like, it could be something that is severe enough, that was abusive, traumatic enough, that bringing her around was absolutely a terrible thing for her to do, and that, no, she can't. We don't even know that the mom knew where they lived. Might not have had her address. And well, now she does, and now she's never going to stop harassing you.
Yep.
Like, you may have completely just screwed up this dude's life again.
Yeah. It's not really, like, his mother. It's actually a mob boss. He's been on the run this whole time. You're a hard guy to find, Antonio.
That, then you never know. I mean, it's entirely possible. Like, you don't. If there's one thing you don't.
Oh, it's me, mother. No.
If there's one thing you don't, that's worse than going against the actual mob boss, it's going against the mob boss's mama. You don't do that. That's a death sentence in itself.
I'm watching too much Sopranos.
Yeah, that'll do it. Want to do one more of these real quick? Then we got a little bit of time here.
Sure.
Dear, oh God, not them. Seriously, them? Really?
Yep, them. Us.
My boyfriend and I broke up after 5 years because he didn't want to marry and have children. I just received an invitation to his wedding. To a woman he's known for 6 months.
Because she's pregnant.
I want to contact him to ask him to explain why he wouldn't marry me, but is marrying someone who is practically a stranger. Not only did he waste 5 years of my life, sending the invitation is callous. My friends say I should let it go, but I need closure.
I mean, there's really no winner in this scenario. I think everybody's trash. I mean, he was open and honest. I don't want to have kids and I don't want to get married. But that just meant he didn't want to have kids and get married to you. So he finds somebody, 6 months, they're getting married. I bet you she's pregnant.
See, I take the exact opposite tack on that. The reason they got married so quickly is because she wouldn't come off wanting to have kids, and this one doesn't want to have kids.
All right, that could be.
That, I feel like, is a lot more likely thing. Like, because you wanted to get married, you wanted to have kids, so you, and he didn't, so you broke up with him.
Right.
He probably didn't want to be tied down ultimately to someone who was absolutely not going to budge on, you're going to give me babies.
Yeah.
So I feel that was probably the breaking point there. I also don't think that you're going to get any sort of closure with this dude, and that's not going to serve you any purpose to contact him. Yep. That said, why did he invite you to his wedding? That does seem weird. That seems like a twist in the knife kind of thing.
It is. Oh, yeah. I can't imagine him saying, you know who we really have to have on the guest list? my ex-girlfriend of 5 years. What do you say about that, huh? Oh, absolutely. Put her down. We'd love to have her. No, that didn't happen.
Yeah, that very much seems like you just wanted to twist the knife.
Yeah, he's kind of a D-bag in that sense. I mean, at least he was open and honest. I don't want to have kids. I don't want to get married to you, and let's break it off. As opposed to like well, maybe he had been stringing her along for 5 years. But, you know, because, I don't know, then he found this one. Something must be really golden about this woman that after 6 months they're getting they're engaged and getting married.
Maybe she's not trying to pressure him into having children.
Could be.
Like that's the only thing that really stands out here as to why, like, maybe he liked everything else about her, but she just kept pushing the kid thing.
Yeah,
because that's the only indication I can really get from the letter.
Yeah, and then he finds out on the wedding night, she's like, "Oh, sorry, found out I'm allergic to latex."
Oh no! Yeah,
skin to skin, or it's not going in, big guy.
Yeah, that's really all you need. But no, I don't think that there's anything good that comes from you reaching out to him. If anything, block him on all social media and contact and all that stuff.
It's done. It's over.
Don't have anything to do with him going forward, quite frankly. Like, no good can possibly come of this.
Right.
Let's go ahead and hit a break. It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. It's Happy Hour. He's Adam Hairhuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And every so often, Adam just brings something to my attention that is just so ridiculously stupid as to completely boggle my mind into how this person managed to survive into adulthood.
Yep, there's a woman in Tampa Bay, Florida. She is seeking a class action lawsuit against the Hershey Company after the packaging for its peanut butter pumpkins left a sour taste in her mouth. How'd you like that writing? Cynthia Kelly filed a proposed class action complaint in federal court on Thursday. This was the story came out December 31st, so there you go.
Okay.
In so federal right court, yeah. Accused the company of falsely representing some of its Reese's peanut butter products.
Well, do they in fact have peanut butter in them?
Yes, they did, and chocolate. Yeah.
Then I suppose they weren't wrongly represented, so we're good then, right?
Well, hold on, pump the brakes, because she went to Aldi's grocery store and she assumed that the product contained a cute looking carving of a pumpkin's mouth and eyes as pictured on the product packaging. Upon opening of the treats, she discovered the product was fully covered with chocolate and none of the detailed carving she claimed inspired her to buy the product.
That's why you're buying candy? That's why you're buying Halloween candy, is for the fun, the explicit carvings on in the intricate details of the peanut butter candy?
I just imagine she buys that, runs out to her car after putting the car back, the shopping cart back, and getting her 25 cents.
Well, of course.
And she is so excited, gets into her car, which I can only imagine is just like the back seat and the front seat is just riddled with candy wrappers. Opens it up, and you know she's expecting to see something smiling at her, and there's just like no eyes, no face, and she's just pounding on the steering wheel, hitting the horn, crying uncontrollably because there's not a face on there.
These people need like serious psychiatric help, man.
This lawsuit would seek damages for all Floridians who purchased the deceptive products, including White Ghost, peanut butter bats, and peanut butter footballs. In seeking class action status, the filing claimed damages would exceed $5 million.
Like, what exactly were you expecting here?
So, Hershey, the people in the Hershey business, they got their head and their face in their hands going, so we actually have to put a warning on the wrapper that... So when she opens up a thing of Rice Krispies, Snap, Crackle, and Pop don't come rolling out of the box. She's shaking the box. She's in there. I know you're in there somewhere. Come on out. You're going to be Snap, Crackle, and Ouch if you don't come out real quick.
like is that really the expectation? Like, the Christmas tree Reese has to have, like, the actual little tinsel and whatnot carved into it? Well, you can have fun now paying $10 extra a bag for that attention to detail. The rest of us just want to stuff our faces with chocolate and peanut butter. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I didn't even notice it was shaped like a pumpkin before it was in my mouth. It's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. I like the peanut butter. I like the pumpkin one, the tree one, because you get like more peanut butter in there. I don't. They're thicker. I love them.
It seems like, I mean, you definitely get more than like the normal miniature peanut butter cups.
Sure, absolutely. Back in the 80s, after watching the California Raisins, she just bought some raisins, put them on the stage. Sing Motown hits. Do it. Do it now.
You know someone probably actually did sue them back in the 80s or attempted to sue them because their box of raisins didn't do a musical number. But, you know, back then you could just laugh these people out of court and not give them the attention they so desired and just did not deserve. Unfortunately, now that's just simply not an option. Because now there's a lawyer willing to take on any stupid case you could possibly throw at them.
At our law office, there is no lawsuit too frivolous. We'll take on any case.
There's not a single ridiculous thing you could possibly try and sue for that we won't help you do. Like,
and of course, she's from Florida.
You want to sue a car insurance company because a lizard didn't actually show up to fix your claim?
Right.
Like, yeah. we'll take that case gladly.
I can't be everywhere at once, mate. Where's my talking lizard? I want my talking lizard.
Like, just how far can you really go with this stuff, man? There weren't actual bees in my Honey Nut Cheerios.
Yeah, right.
We'll take your case at the law offices at Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Kind of mess your world up. You're trying to enjoy a bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios. All of a sudden, this bee comes. It's part of your complete breakfast. Oh my God! I'm gonna roll up newspaper. Smack. Good. I can get back to my cereal. Oh, he's still kicking. There he
is. Not anymore, he ain't. These people seriously exist in this world.
They walk among us, yes.
And that's truly the scariest part of all of this.
There's not a judge in the world that is going to be like, oh, this had to happen on a Monday, didn't it? They're bringing this wackadoo.
But, it is Florida, so, I mean, it's entirely possible.
Yeah.
You might find one crazy enough down there to actually indulge this. And that's a scary thing all the way around.
Good luck to her, I guess.
I don't know what you're hoping to get out of this, because you're just going to ruin it for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Like, now, if you actually have to make them start doing these intricate designs on their, like, peanut butter candy, like, you know that the price on those are going to go through the roof.
Oh, yeah. She's going to get, I won. I finally won. They finally have a actual pumpkin face on there. See, everybody, I won.
$26. They're paying $26 for peanut butter cups? Thanks a lot.
I'm not doing this. She walks off.
Way to ruin it for everybody, lady. God's wrong with people, man. On that note, let's go ahead and hit a break. Picks are up next. It is happy hour. Stick around. It's that time of the week again. It's Friday. It's almost the end of the show. It's almost the end of NFL season, and it is time for the picks. Yeah, I know. But unlike most years, you're actually going to have a relevant team here in the postseason. So you got that going for you. So the picks will at least get to be fun in that regard for a little while yet.
That's true.
So no Jim this week. Drew Duffney joins us on the phone trying to get that ever-elusive first win of the year.
Yeah, but it's a new year. I'm just trying to get the first win of the season at this point. It's a brand new year.
Well,
let's knock it out of the park.
We'll see about that. We've got a lot of games to pick this week because there's a lot of stuff that has real playoff implications yet. We'll start with the two Saturday games, the Pittsburgh Steelers are headed into Baltimore to take on the Ravens. The bad news is they have to beat the Ravens more than likely to make the playoffs. The good news is the Steelers can clinch a postseason berth with a victory and a loss by either Buffalo or Jacksonville. But you could get in with a loss, but you need help from multiple other teams. The good news is Lamar Jackson's not playing.
That would explain why Steelers are favored.
Right. And I'm not sure who exactly is... who's going to be... Oh, Tyler Huntley's going to start in Jackson's place for Baltimore. Odell Beckham Jr. is also not playing, as are multiple receivers and defensive players. Meanwhile, Mason Rudolph is getting the start for Pittsburgh. He so far has helped the team to beat Cincy and Seattle to put them in a position to potentially clinch a playoff spot. I feel like I know what Jim would take here regardless. I'm just going to put him down for the Steelers now.
Yeah.
That said, Adam Hairhawk, you're on the pick.
Normally I would go with the Ravens, but they're missing a lot of components. So, yeah, give me the Steelers.
Drew.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I was going to take the Steelers anyway, but if you're missing that many pieces, you can't play much of a game.
Is this going to be unanimous pick for the Steelers?
Wow.
I guess it is, because give me the Steelers as well. Up next, the battle for the AFC South. Two teams that weren't supposed to be in this position at all. The Indianapolis Colts and the Houston Texans. Neither one of these teams were expected to do much of anything really this season. And yet somehow, CJ Stroud's been a beast for Houston thus far. Meanwhile, Gardner Minshew has stepped in for Anthony Richardson with the Colts, and he's had quite a bit of success. He's won 7 games this season, the most of his career. And what's really going his way is that the pass defense for the Texans lets up about 240 yards a game for whatever that might be worth. We'll start with Drew Duffney on the pick.
My belief is if anybody can wrangle a team of Colts, it's going to be a Texan. Give me the Houston.
Adam.
Not me. Give me Indy.
I mean, this is a tough one. Because, yeah, Minshew has absolutely done far more than was expected of him this season. And the pass defense for the Texans is going to give you quite a bit to work with. But you'll have to keep the turnovers down. And that might be a little bit of an issue for old Uncle Rico. He's got 9 interceptions on the season against 15 touchdowns for Indy. That said, give me the team that's won, 5 of the last 7 in this series. Give me the Colts. Up next, Tampa Bay. They're headed to Carolina in an attempt to help the Bucs clinch the NFC South. They need to get past the 2-14 Panthers, which I feel like shouldn't be that hard to do, you would think. But it is technically a game with playoff implications, so we're going to pick it. Adam Hairhot.
Oh, it's going to be Tampa Bay Buccaneers all the way.
Drew.
I'm with Adam on that one.
Tampa Bay is favored by 4.5. Give me all 4.5 of those sweet, sweet points. Up next, the Browns headed to Cincy to take on the Bengals. The Bengals are favored by 7 in this one because the Browns are sitting out Joe Flacco. As the Bengals have already kind of clinched a playoff spot. So Jeff Driscoll, he's making his debut for the Browns. The 5th QB that team has started this season. Interestingly enough, he made 5 starts for the Bengals back in 2018 and had at the very least, he was here for a hot minute, too, from what I remember. He played for Detroit at one point. In the 2019 season, he ended up getting 3 starts during one of many times in which Matt Stafford got hurt. And he didn't do very well here or really anywhere else. Since he's favored by 7 in this one, we start with Drew.
I think at the end of the game, Cincy's going to be singing, "We got the beat, we got the beat, we," and Cincy's going to stomp all over the Browns.
Do we tell them that's a
Like a flaming bag of poo.
We could tell him that, but let's let him have.
He's on a roll.
He is.
Yeah, considering what they're sitting down for the Browns, yeah, give me the Bengals.
Yeah, at this point, Cincy is kind of really fighting for their lives here. While at this point, Cleveland has nothing to play for, and also nothing to lose. I'm not entirely certain at this point if Cincy could even make the playoffs. Like, it's a long shot at best. I don't believe they've been officially eliminated yet, though. But
a lot of things would have to go right for them.
A lot of things would have to go right. I mean, they're sitting at 500 right now. I'm going to take the Bengals only because only one of these teams has literal anything to play for. Up next, the battle for the... Also still part of the battle for the NFC South and also possibly a playoff spot, as New Orleans could yet make it into the playoffs if they win against the Falcons. It's like I said, it's a dogfight for that last wild card spot, and the Saints do have a chance here. Atlanta comes in 7-9, and they're not fighting for a whole lot other than probably Arthur Smith's job at this point. But that said, this is a game that the Saints desperately need, and they are favored by 3. This could also potentially decide the winner of the NFC South altogether, too. Because remember, Tampa Bay is also at 8-8. So if they lose to the Panthers, the winner of the Falcons-Saints game will win the NFC South. So the Falcons still have a path, albeit a slim one, into the playoffs. We start with Adam Harahuck on the pick.
I think at the end of the night, both those teams will finish out the record 8-9. Falcons with the win. Give me that upset.
Drew.
New Orleans is going to be waving that sweet, sweet victory fleur-de-lis. Give me the Saints.
Atlanta's path to the playoffs at this point is just so... There's so much that has to go right for them. I just don't think they've got the talent to do it, quite frankly. Like they're at least in the conversation on the last day of the year, but if Tampa Bay wins, it's a moot point for them. Meanwhile, the Saints, they could, regardless of whether Tampa wins, they win and they're still in the at least in the hunt for a wild card. They're gonna be going all out to win this thing. Give me the Saints. Up next, the Jags going to Tennessee to try and clinch their second straight AFC title against the Tennessee Titans. This seemingly should have been done weeks ago, but things have not gone well for the Jags of late. They beat the Panthers last week because everyone beats the Panthers, but that followed up 4 straight losses in a row against Tampa, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Cincy. And really kind of suggests they're going to be cannon fodder for whoever they end up facing in the playoffs. But if they want to clinch it now and be done with it, Jacksonville needs this game. Tennessee, they're 5-11. They have nothing to play for. And you could also be looking at the final game Derrick Henry plays as a Tennessee Titan. He's out of a contract at the end of this season. So we'll start with Drew Duffney on the pick.
Jacksonville, where Gatorade came from?
I believe so.
Somewhere in Florida. I think you're right.
Yeah.
University of Florida.
Yeah. I think Jacksonville's going to do it. Give me the Jags.
Adam.
Ditto. Give me the Jaguars.
I mean, Tennessee's not really looking to do much other than hope that Derrick Henry will stick around there, but here's the thing. You've got a couple injuries that could really derail things for the Jags in Tennessee. Trevor Lawrence, he's got an injury to his right passing shoulder and a finger injury, and 2 of your top wideouts, Christian Kirk and Zay Jones, are nursing respectively groin and a hamstring injury. So there's no guarantee that those 3 are going to be ready to go Sunday. On top of that, your kick return, Jamal Agnew's done for the season. It looks like Will Levis is expected to he's dealing with injuries to both feet after he had a Texan defender stomp on his right foot after he already had a sprained right ankle. So he's going to be questionable, certainly. That said, give me the Jags. I don't see any scenario in which they lose this game. They would really have to screw this up monumentally to not pull it off. Up next, Seattle. They're headed to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. They need this game because they are on. They're one of those teams in that dogfight for the last wild card spot. They come in at 8-8. A win would certainly go a long way towards getting them in. And luckily for them, they have to face Arizona, who is terrible. Arizona is a 3-point dog. We start with Adam.
I don't want the Seahawks, because I'm afraid that the Lions are going to be matched up with them in the first round. And I said it earlier in the broadcast, I don't want this matchup, but I also want to win these picks. So, yeah, I guess give me the Seahawks.
Drew.
I picked Arizona last week, and that's what put me, or not the week we're in, but the previous week, and that's what put me in the winner's circle. I don't think they're going to let me down again. Give me the Cardinals.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but they did beat the Eagles last week. And the Eagles were absolutely still playing for something. You know, I would love to see them ruin the Seahawks' playoff chances. And you know what? I'm betting that's going to happen. Give me the Cardinals.
Well, I hope I lose it.
You took them with me last week, and they won. It's the Sean and Drew duel.
Well, I hope you guys are both right.
I like the I yin and yang for the Arizona Cardinals. Yes. Ebony and ivory.
I guess so. Up next, the Martin other.
Martin Guinness.
There you go. Up next, the other battle of the NFC North, the Chicago Bears, the Green Bay Packers. The Packers are also still in the fight for the last wild card spot. They need this one over the 7-9 Bears. Nothing the Bears can do to get in. Really, they're coaching to save Matt Eberflus's job and possibly Justin Fields's. So we'll start with Drew Duffney on the pick.
I'm going with Green Bay just because I think Jimmy Kimmel's gone too far and he's too much of a crybaby right now.
Well, Aaron Rodgers plays for the Jets now.
Yeah, well, there's that.
He doesn't play for anybody, but, you know.
Oh, I thought he played for Green Bay still.
He used to.
About Brett Favre?
Oh, he's been long gone.
Oh, okay. Well, still give me Green Bay.
Bart Starr's dead, just before we put that out there.
Adam Harahawk on the pick. Get us out of this.
Give me the pack. Give me the points.
There's so many people just screaming at the radios right now. I guarantee it.
Stop him before he talks about Johnny Unitas.
Someone's got to do it. You know what? Nothing could be more just would bring me more joy this week, I don't think, than the Packers losing the game that could actually get them into the playoffs on the last day of the season at home. So you know what? Gimme the Bears. Up next, Philly headed to New York to take on the Giants. This is a key game for Philly because now, thanks to Dallas and their surge of late, they find themselves needing this to win the NFC East, and then they still need a little bit of help on top of that. They need Washington to take care of some work for them as well. But they're in New York taking on the G-Men. Tyrod Taylor getting the start for the G-Men this week. No more Tommy Kotlitz. We start with Adam on the pick.
Oh, yeah. Give it. Eagles, they still got something to play for. Give me Philly.
Drew.
Yep, Philly for me too.
Because this could still theoretically help us, and at some point I gotta pick for me and not just to win this thing. Give me the G-Men with the upset. Tyrod Taylor somehow leads that team to a win on the last day of the regular season. Nothing would make me laugh more than that. Then you have Matt Stafford. Well, I don't think Matt Stafford's playing this week. They benched him. So who is their backup out in Los Angeles? Because also San Fran.
Well, why have they benched him? Is he injured, or have they shown up there?
Because they can't really do anything. I mean, they've clinched their wild card berth already. So it's just, are they going to be the sixth seed or the seventh? So they're benching Matt Stafford over at the stupid Rams, and they're going to try and win this game against San Fran, who is starting Sam Darnold over Brock Purdy because they've already clinched the number one overall seed in the NFC.
So who the hell cares?
Kind of, but there's still potentially implications for the Rams. So we'll start with Drew Duffy on the pick while I try and figure out who is starting for the Rams.
I'll take San Francisco. Give me the Rice Aroni. That's going to be the side dish of the week.
All right. Adam, I'm guessing here that Brett Rypien is going to be getting the start. He's the only other QB that I'm aware of on that roster.
Yeah, give me the Niners.
You know what? I don't think it really matters who starts for San Fran. I mean, Brock Purdy's like only the fifth best player on his own team. Give me the Niners as well. Let's make it just a unanimous across the board pick for San Fran. How many points are they favored by? 4? Yeah, give me the 4 points too. Up next, the Cowboys head to Washington to take on the Commanders.
Oh boy.
They're favored by 13.
Wow.
The Commanders are, not good. Not a good team at all. They've lost in recent weeks to the Niners, the Jets, the Rams, the Dolphins, the Cowboys again, and the G-Men all just in the last month and a half or so. Not going well for them, and they're starting Sam Howell on Sunday. So we'll go ahead and start with Adam Harahawk on the pick.
Yeah, it's got to be Cowboys, right?
You would think that.
I would think that they still have a lot to play for, and you know, if they're not winning, the refs will make sure that they're winning. So yeah, give me the Cowboys, and you know what? Give me the points.
Drew.
Well, Dallas is stupid anyway. They really didn't win. I see it all over billboards every time I drive. So
Are you honestly seeing those billboards?
Yeah, there's one on 496, there's one on 96, there's one on 94, and there's one on 69. I've seen 4 different billboards.
I haven't seen any of these yet, but I haven't been down in Detroit since that game.
They're on the flashy ones, on the digital ones.
Oh, okay.
So, obviously, you got to be driving by at the right time because there's like 3 different advertisements on it, but I drive so darn much that,
yeah,
you know, of course, I got a better opportunity to see them. But yeah, no, I've seen 4 different highways, and I'm like, wow. I thought it was kind of a raw deal, but I didn't realize that people would go because those are pretty pricey. They're about $1,000 a month to rent those.
Yes. And
I know of 4 of them that I've personally seen.
Some Lions fan with money is pretty upset.
I would say so. Give me Dallas, but keep the points. Buffalo headed to Miami. Both these teams are – Miami's in the playoffs no matter what happens here. Buffalo – you know, things are looking pretty good for them at 10-6. It's really mostly they're looking to clinch their division. They're looking to clinch the AFC East for the 4th straight time, but Miami is kind of in their way on that. They'll know before kickoff Sunday night whether they need to beat the Dolphins just to make the playoffs. So they could literally be facing, by the time the game starts Sunday night, a situation where either you're going to win and be the winner of the AFC East or lose and be out of the playoffs entirely. Let's see what Miami chooses to ultimately do with that. It doesn't look like Miami's benching anybody, so you're going to have to go all out to beat them. That said, we start with Drew on the pick.
I think it's going to be Florida for the clean sweep. I've picked every other Florida team. I may as well go all the way.
Adam.
Yeah, the Bills are going to have someone to play for. They're going to be tenacious. Give me Buffalo.
Yeah, for as good as Miami has been this season, and they've been very impressive, don't get me wrong. Buffalo has everything to lose with this game. They're going to be playing hard to the end of this. Give me the Bills. And then finally, the game we all kind of sort of ish care about, but not really. Minnesota, Detroit, the Lions, the Vikings, in a game that could potentially get you the number 2 seed, but also you're playing Nick Mullins, and none of this really matters. We start with Adam Harahawk on the pick.
Oh, I'm going with Detroit. Detroit over the Vikings. Detroit 30, Minnesota 18.
Drew Duffney.
28, Detroit 17, Minnesota.
28-17?
28-2-8-1-7.
Okay. That's
my ATM code.
Like there's any money in your account anyway. Honestly, while there is still very much a chance Alliance or that the Vikings could make the playoffs here, but I don't think it's going to matter. Like this team's kind of just they've exhausted everything they have at their disposal, including quarterbacks. This is not going to be a particularly close game, I don't think. Final here. Detroit Lions, 35. The Vikings, 13. I guess we should do that. I hear there's another game of some sort going on Monday. I guess let's go ahead and pick that national title game then. Maestro, the music, please. You know who's playing. You know what the stakes are. Michigan, Washington, the national championship game. And you are favored, to the surprise of really nobody, by 4.5 in this one. We'll start. You know, let's let the Michigan guy have a crack at it first. Adam Harahawk on the pick. I'll be nice just this one time.
I'm going to say go
Blue. I think
Blue.
It's malarkey. He didn't even vote for Michigan to win last week.
You're right. He doesn't even have any faith in this team. I should let him pick first, but yeah, here I am doing it anyway.
Give me the Wolverines.
I get it.
Give me a score.
Wolverines. Oh, man. Wolverines 32. Huskies 2. No. Huskies 21.
Drew.
Just because I'm saying Washington's going to win. And it's going to be 27-19.
Yeah, as much as I wouldn't mind seeing Washington win because I'm just sick and tired of Michigan just in general and Harbaugh and all this nonsense.
Yes.
I may be a lot of things, but I ain't an idiot. I know U of M is going to win this game, and it's probably not going to be overly close. I would give it a final Michigan 28. The Huskies, they'll be charitable here and say 21. I'll even say they'll have a chance to win it on their last drive, and Michigan will get an interception to seal the deal.
I mean, Michigan fans, we've got to be really enjoying this moment because I have a feeling things are gonna if Khaki Pants leaves for the NFL, this could be it. This could be the end of that. This I'm not gonna say dynasty, but you know this era.
Enjoy it now because it's probably getting vacated by the time next season starts. There's your picks. We'll come back and close this thing out in just a moment. It is Happy Hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. We got to get out of here, but stick around. A full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. Before we go, though, got a little bit of business to take care of in our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls. Happy Hour would like to apologize to the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland, Connor McDavid, Connor Bedard, Chicago Blackhawks, starring Connor Bedard, and apparently the Connor Blackhawks. We're sorry. We got to go. Session is next. All being well. Talk to you tomorrow. Talk to you Monday afternoon at 3. See ya.